Hare Krishna. I'm very happy to be again with all of you, with you, Haripat Prabhu. I'll speak something from the Bhagavad Gita as it is. I'm working now on some sort of understanding of Prabhupada's mission. He had a beautiful document written before he registered ISKCON in New York. And there is a very interesting point in this document. He speaks about Diksha, or spiritual initiation. And he says this document that the purpose of spiritual initiation is ultimately to see God in everything. So I wanted to speak about this particular point by taking a very important verse from Bhagavad Gita, which Srila Prabhupada quite often quoted in his lectures and walks. It's a very interesting verse, and I would like to elaborate a little bit on this verse in connection with our present situation. So, with your permission, I will read the verse number 30 from the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita as it is, entitled Dhyana Yoga. Yomam pasyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pasyati tasyaham na pranasyami sa chame na pranasyati. Yaha, whoever, mam, me, pasyati, sees, sarvatra, everywhere, sarvam, everything, cha, and, mai, in me, pasyati, sees, tasya, for him, aham, I, na, not, pranasyami, am lost, saha, he, cha, also, me, me, to me, na, nor, pranasyati, is lost. Translation. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. A person in Krishna consciousness certainly sees Lord Krishna everywhere, and he sees everything in Krishna. Such a person may appear to see all separate manifestations of the material nature, but in each and every instance he is conscious of Krishna, knowing that everything is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. Nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the development of love of Krishna, a position transcendental even to material liberation. At this stage of Krishna consciousness, beyond self-realization, the devotee becomes one with Krishna in the sense that Krishna becomes everything for the devotee, and the devotee becomes full in loving Krishna. An intimate relationship between the Lord and the devotee then exists. In that stage, the living entity can never be annihilated, nor is the personality of Godhead ever out of the sight of the devotee. To merge in Krishna is spiritual annihilation. A devotee takes no such risk. It is stated in the Brahma Samhita, Primanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena Santah Sadaeva Hridayesha Vilokayanti Yam Syamasundaram Machintya Guna Svarupam Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is always seen by the devotee whose eyes are anointed with the pulp of love. He is seen in his eternal form of Syamasundara, situated within the heart of the devotee. At this stage, Lord Krishna never disappears from the sight of the devotee, nor does the devotee ever lose sight of the Lord. In the case of a yogi who sees the Lord as Paramatma within the heart, the same applies. Such a yogi turns into a pure devotee and cannot bear to live for a moment without seeing the Lord within himself. Yamam pasyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pasyati sarvam chamai pasyati tasyaham napranasyami sa chame napranasyati. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vidham Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakha Vidamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagat Pate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostude Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sudadevi Pranamani Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Ajanulam Vitibhujo Kanakavadata Sankirtanai Kapitaro Kamalaya Taksi Vishwambaro Dvijavaro Yugadharma Palo Vande Jagat Priyakaro Karunavatara Yantah Pravishya Mama Vachama Mam Prasuktam Sanjeevaya Dekila Shakti Darak Svadamna Anyam Shahasta Charana Shravana Dvagadi Pranam Namo Bhagavate Purushavata. So in this verse, Bhagavan Sri Krishna explains the experience of a yogi. Ultimately, whatever practice we do, is culminated in our experience or perception of the world. The philosophy in Indian language, in Sanskrit, is called darshan. And darshan means vision, the way of seeing the world, the creation, the world around us, everything. And ultimately, darshan means experience. The difference between the Indian philosophy and Western philosophy is that Western philosophy is speculation. The very word philosophy means love for wisdom or love for speculation. They just like to speculate, and you know, they speculate and speculate and speculate, share their love for speculation with other speculators. But Indian philosophy is different. Indian philosophy stresses the point of experience. There is no point of philosophy without ultimately experiencing what this philosophy is all about. Therefore, every darshan has a specific practice attached to it. In India, in the West, you know, whatever great philosopher you take, practically there is no practice there. They don't attach any practice. They don't say, this is the sadhana you should follow to realize this truth. This is purely on a mental platform, on a mental level. Everything is happening there. But it's not like this in India. Indian philosophy is practical. It has to be brought into the realm of our practice, of our real life. And ultimately, it culminates in a specific experience. And Krishna, after explaining the yoga system, Dhyana Yoga is specifically about yoga, which is very famous, about eightfold yoga system, Patanjali Yoga, whatever yoga you call it, Raja Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga. After explaining this yoga, Krishna says, what is the experience one gets out of it? Nowadays, when there is a very cheap version of yoga, is very popular, people think that the experience, the ultimate experience of yoga is that you feel good. You feel good and you're yogi. You can sit in Padmasana and you can squeeze yourself this way and that way. And you feel light. This is ultimate experience or something like this. But Krishna, he makes a very important and very deep point, which we all have to understand, that the culmination of yoga, of real yoga, not just this cheap yoga system which is being marketed everywhere. The culmination of this is a specific form of vision when you see everything in God, as Krishna says, and you see God in everything. And ultimately, what Krishna wants to say here, which is little hidden and little indirect, but Krishna is often approaches parokshavad, indirect way of explaining things. Ultimately, he says that the culmination of yoga is love. And Srila Prabhupada very clearly explained this, of course. His purpose is to elucidate what Krishna wants to say, but by some reason doesn't say. Prabhupada is very clear about this. He says that this is the ultimate message of Krishna, and this is the ultimate message and ultimate goal of yoga, and this is the ultimate goal of every path which you take, no matter what it is. Whether it's karma yoga or jnana yoga or ashtanga yoga or, you know, Sai Baba yoga or whatever yoga it is, kriya yoga, this yoga or that yoga, the purpose of yoga, the very word yoga, means love. Yoga, the word yoga, means upaya. One of the meaning, the general meaning of yoga, means the method, the process. Yoga is the process which has to bring you to some goal, and the goal of yoga, as Krishna very clearly says here, very clearly, extremely clear, is to see God everywhere. And this is love. Love is a specific sort of a vision of the world when you see the object of your love everywhere. Where you're constantly absorbed in the object of your love, as somebody whom you love. Like, you know, Prabhupada gives a very beautiful example. He gives the example of a mother. He says, if a mother loves the child, then whatever mother sees, it reminds her about the child. Especially if she is in some emotional state of despair, the child is lost or something like this, then whatever she will see, it will remind him about the child, and she will basically see the child there. And this is the experience of real yogi. The real yogi is the one who develops this ability to understand that God is everywhere, that God is present in every heart. And amazingly enough, this sort of a vision which is given here by Krishna while he's explaining Ashtanga Yoga, and which is, seems to be a little far away from our path, from the path of love, exactly the same description is given in Srimad Bhagavatam, when the description of Uttama Adhikari, the highest possible achievement of Bhakti Yoga, is there. It says there the same thing. Sarva Bhuteshu Yah Pasyet Bhagavad Bhavam Bhavataha Atmanaha, that Sarva Bhuteshu Yah Pasyet, the one who sees in every living being Bhagavad Bhava, presence of God, existence of God. If you see Bhagavad Bhava in every living being, then you are Uttama Adhikari, then you are beyond this world. And Prabhupada, he gives the same explanation to this verse. He says that the real goal of yoga is love. The real goal of yoga is not to feel good. The real goal of yoga is not to get rid of your digestion problems or constipation or whatever it is which they say there. No, the real goal of yoga is one. And the real goal of all Vedic literature is one. It may be hidden. It may not be stated directly. Like here, Krishna doesn't say directly that the goal of yoga, of Ashtanga Yoga, is to love me. But ultimately he says this, because you know, he gives many indirect ways. This is what people often don't understand. You know, they read Vedic literature and it's all parokshavada. It's actually the whole mode of writing Vedic literature is parokshavada. It's hardly anywhere it's written in a very direct manner. And actually Krishna says, I like when somebody speaks about me indirectly. He says, you know, especially when it comes to love, you cannot speak directly. You know, it's only in the bad movies somebody says, I love you, and then somebody says, yeah, I love you. In love, you don't speak like this. In love, you say, you know, in love, what Rupa Goswami, he speaks about love for God. And he says, if you want to keep your material love, don't go to Keshi Ghat. Don't go to Keshi Ghat. Because there you will see Govinda, who is banned in three places, and he's playing flute. So what Rupa Goswami wants to say, run to Keshi Ghat. But he says, don't go to Keshi Ghat, don't go to Keshi Ghat. Because it's indirect. It's parokshavad. And whatever you tell, whatever you say, whatever you take, you know, whether it is Upanishads or Vedas, it's all parokshavad. It's all indirectly speaking. But the ultimate goal of anything which is there in the Vedic literature is love. Krishna is not speaking about anything else. The great sages which created or revealed Vedic literatures are not speaking about anything else. They are speaking about love. And this is what we have to understand. Sometimes people say there are so many ways. You know, you go this way and I go this way. Yatamat tatapat. You know, whatever you have in your mind, this is your way. It's bogus. It's not true. There is only one way. Because goal is only one. God is only one. The nature of living being is only one. We all have similar nature. And the goal of every living entity is one. This is love. We want love, we want happiness. And happiness is not coming by any other means but love. You know, you try to buy happiness. Go to supermarket and ask at the counter, you know, how much happiness costs. Oh, they will tell you, so what kind of happiness you want? Cheap happiness or expensive happiness? But this is not happiness. Happiness is only coming from a certain state which is there within your heart, which is called love. When you love God, you're happy everywhere. You may be put in prison, you will still love everyone, and everyone will love you. You may be in a very horrible situation, you will still be happy. And vice versa, you may have everything in this world, but if you don't have love, you will feel totally empty. You know, like once I was speaking with a group of rich people, and I told them, let's imagine, let's make a mental experiment. You know, you have everything, everything whatever you like, everything possible. No more desires to be fulfilled. But nobody likes you and you don't like anyone. Would you be happy? They said, no. And then I asked them, okay, now, you know, let's say you don't have much. You have little bit, but you have love and you love everyone and everyone loves you. Would you be happy? They said, yes. And I asked them, what do you want? You want to have everything and don't have love, or you want to have love and not have much? They said, we want both. So, why? Because they don't understand in reality. They don't have this experience. The point, again, of any Vedic path is that you will have to get the experience. If you have the experience of love, when you're completely filled with love, you don't need anything. You don't need anything because you're already happy. All these rules which are there in yoga or any other path of in any other Vedic literature, whatever passes there, all these regulations, they're there only to explain to us what is the state of mind of somebody who has love. Because in this state of mind, all these rules are followed automatically. Like yoga, you start from yam niyam, asana pranayam, yam niyam. Yam niyam, yam starts from ahimsa. You know, asteya, parigraha, satya, whatever is there. You know, you don't steal, you don't inflict harm to anyone. But all these things, you know, if you have love, you will not steal. Why do you steal? Why do people steal? Because they feel empty. They're unfulfilled. Something is lacking. They think that if I have something which somebody else has, I will be happy. But if you have love, you don't steal. You know, if somebody has love, you don't tell him, don't steal from the one whom you love. Can you imagine somebody loves somebody and then in the meantime steals something from you? It's not possible. Somebody who has love doesn't inflict pain to anyone. Somebody who has love, you don't have to tell him you follow ahimsa. No, he will follow ahimsa naturally because he has love. Love is everything. All these rules culminate in love. Everyone who has love follows this. And this is the goal of every endeavor. Every endeavor, whatever endeavor we have, is to obtain love. And the only point is to understand how to obtain love. Krishna himself, he wanted to show this very beautifully. When Krishna comes, when he comes here, his main purpose is to teach. And of course, he teaches in Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, he teaches in an indirect way. In his life, he teaches in a very direct way. Krishna comes and he really shows what he wants. What Krishna wants? Krishna wants one thing, love. He's God. He has everything. He's Sadaishwarya Purna. All the six opulence in full are in him. He doesn't need anything. He still is totally, completely hungry for what? For love. He's little child and he's crying and crying and crying and crying and crying. Why? He wants his mother's milk. And somebody looks at this and says, what kind of God it is? What kind of God it is? But this is the highest conception of God. This is God who shows to us what we really need. If God needs it, what to speak about us? If God needs love, you know, we, being His parts and parcels, also only need love. And there is a beautiful, description of how Krishna behaves. Krishna was born from Vasudeva and Devaki. And he could have been born from Nanda and Yashoda. Of course, we know, according to our philosophy, according to Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, our acharyas, Krishna was also born in Vrindavan. But for external people, all the external people think Krishna was born where? In Mathura, from Vasudev and Devaki. And what he does, he's born from Vasudev and Devaki. By this act, he's teaching us. What is his teaching? What is his lesson? He's born from Vasudev and Devaki, but he wants to go where? He wants to go to Vrindavan. He wants to go to Vrindavan, therefore he arranges all this big drama about Kamsa. Kamsa will come, and Devaki is totally paranoid. Kamsa will come tomorrow morning and he will kill you, and Vasudev is very afraid, and Vasudev takes this child, and this child himself says, you take me to Vrindavan because... But what he wants to teach us, what is important, not the blood relationship. He didn't want to stay with Vasudev and Devaki, their own mother, his own mother, his own father. Why? Because he wants love of Yashoda and Nanda. And this love is greater than love of Vasudev and Devaki. You know, this whole thing, you know, there was absolutely no need for Vasudev to bring Kamsa to Vrindavan. Krishna to Vrindavan. If Krishna wanted, he could have killed Kamsa. It would be a nice lila. You know, Krishna, after all, he killed Putana when he was 6 days old. And Putana was a huge demoness, and it didn't take long for Krishna to kill her. Krishna just sucked little milk from her and said, doesn't taste so nice. And together with the milk, he sucked her life and everything else. And she was yelling and crying, and she was flying everywhere. You know, just imagine how nice lily it would be if Krishna would stay in Mathura in the prison. The next day, Kamsa comes. And he takes this child, as he used to do with other children of Vasudeva and Devaki. And he just, you know, tries to do something with this child. And this child is just, you know, does something really funny with this Kamsa. Krishna could have done it. It would be a nice lila, you know, would be recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam very beautifully, how Krishna would kill his mama, his maternal uncle, on the first day. You know, would be nice, isn't it? No, but Krishna didn't want it. Krishna created this whole thing for one purpose. He, of course, he didn't want to leave Vasudeva, and he didn't want to be rude with Vasudev and Devaki. He wouldn't, you know, Krishna would have told to Vasudev and Devaki, thank you for giving birth to me, I'll go to Nanda and Yashoda, you stay here in prison. No, he created this whole lila, you know, that Vasudev, he's just so afraid and he wants to bring him somewhere. But in reality, Krishna, what he wants to show, he wants to show to us one thing. I need love. I need the real love of Vasudeva, sorry, of not Vasudeva and Devaki, Nanda and Yashoda. And he creates this whole beautiful thing just to teach us this simple thing. You know, everything in this world is based on love. Everything is based on love. Whatever valuable we have is only love. The amount of love we have makes us worth living. And if we don't have any love, there is no point of living. You know, when mother, you know, even the first sutra of Vedanta Sutra, the first sutra, second sutra of Vedanta Sutra, Janmadya Syayataha, it's also about love. How is it about love? In Vedanta Sutra it is said, who is this God? Who is this Brahman? Who is this? He is the source of everything. He is the source of creation. He is the source of maintenance. He is the source of destruction. And ultimately, what this sutra wants to teach us, that whatever is happening here, the source of everything, is doing everything because of one reason, because of love. Why do you create anything? Why do you maintain anything? And ultimately, why do you destroy everything? Because of love only. You know, why women give birth to children? Why? Is it pleasant? Most of you don't know, because most of you are not women. It's so painful. And it really, logically, it doesn't make any sense. Just from rational point of view, you know, first of all, you have to bear this baby for 9 months. And it's so difficult, and it's, you know, it's painful, and it's so, and then painful, you're giving birth painfully, and then for many, many years, you just stuck with this baby. What is the point? For what you do? Why people do this? Why people still do this? Is there any sense of it? From the rational point of view, from the intelligent point of view, there is absolutely no sense. There is only few intelligent people here, they're wearing saffron. But the rest of people do this. Why? Because they want love. Because this is love. You know, what I want to say is that why the whole world is based on love. The world is created by love. The world is maintained by love. Why Krishna? Give me one reason why Krishna created this world. It's so much headache for him. You know, it's so much headache for a little girl to give birth to a baby. Can you imagine how much headache for God to deal with this crazy world? You know, why did he do this? Is he in his right mind? No, he's totally self-satisfied. He could be completely there. He's Atmaram, he's Aptakam, he doesn't need anything. He still creates this world with so much headaches. Why? Because of the relationship. Ekoba Husyam, Upanishad says this. The one God wanted to become many. Why? Because he wanted love. The love is the basis of creation. The love is everything here. And there is only one yoga. There is only one yoga. Yoga of love. Bhakti yoga. There is no other yoga. Everything else is just commercial enterprise. Nothing else. And the only point in life is to understand how to obtain love. We have to understand very clearly that I need love. And then, after understanding this, first of all, we have to understand who we are. We are part of God. We are not on our own. We are part. And the purpose of the part is to serve whole, and this service is called love. So we have to understand that when we fulfill our purpose, when we fulfill our mission, when we fulfill our real nature, then only we can become happy. So we have to understand who we are, then we have to understand what is our goal, and then we have to understand the process. And this is the most important thing. And the process is actually very difficult. We usually say it's very simple. Just chant Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yes, it's simple in one sense. It's difficult because it requires certain qualification. The most important thing when we speak about the process, and I wanted to speak definitely about the yoga. This is the final destination. This is the experience of a great yogi, of a great devotee, of anyone who rightly follows the spiritual path. But we have to understand how to achieve this path, how to really tread this path, what we have to do. And in any Vedic system, there is a very important part of the description of the adhikar. What is the qualification for one to follow this path? Basically, if I understand, this is I am, this is my goal. Now, the next important point is that, what is my qualification? You know, you all, most of you are students. Why do you study? Why do you take so much headache to study? Why do you spend years and years and years? What is the purpose? Ultimately, what is the purpose? To get diploma, right? Diploma is what? Diploma is the certificate of your qualification. You know, to do anything, you have to have certain qualification. And qualification is, you know, you all know it's not easy. You have to pass so many exams, you have to do this, you have to spend sleepless nights, you have to do this very... horrible thing. I still sometimes in my horror dreams, in my nightmares, I see how I pass some exams in the university. It's a horrible experience, but still people do this. Why? Because they want qualification. So we have to know what is the qualification for love. Qualification for love is difficult. That's why I said that this path is not easy. The qualification for love is what? It's humility. Qualification for love is humility. And humility is very difficult for proud people, and we are all proud people. Otherwise, we would not be here. The proof that we are proud is that we exist in this material world. And this material world means ahankar. I'm doing this. I'm so, you know, look at me. I'm so big. I'm so great. I'm sitting here. You're sitting there. Everyone is proud. Everyone, and everyone is cherishing pride. Everyone is feeding his own pride. This whole culture, you know, this actually Vedic culture, why it is so great? Because Vedic culture teaches people how to become humble. And that's why nobody likes Vedic culture. That's why in the West they say this Vedic culture is backwards. Because what is Western culture? Western culture is how to become proud. And more you go to the West, the more proud you become. I am who you are to tell me what I have to do. Get out of here, you know. I'm on my own. You know, this pride is horrible. It destroys human civilization. It destroys the whole universe. It destroys the earth. You know, people are going crazy. Why people are so mentally disturbed? Because of pride, because of this. At least in Vedic culture, at least in Indian culture, some basic understanding is there that you have to be a little humble. You know, you have to touch feet of your parents. In the West, in America, you know, if somebody will tell to children that they have to touch feet of their parents, children will file court case. You can't do this to children in the West. You can't discipline them. No possible. No way. You know, because the modern civilization is how to develop pride, and this is what they teach. And this is what they teach nowadays also in India, unfortunately. It's India is following the same crazy system. And this is destroys everything. This destroys personal life. This totally destroys the mental health. This destroys everything. And, you know, this is the destructive path. So the qualification for love, and this is the secret which I wanted to tell you. The secret, every other path, why there are so many different paths, spiritual paths in India or anywhere else. Ultimately, every other path is to teach you little humility. So that ultimately you qualify yourself for the path of love. If you take yoga, what is yoga? Yoga is teaching you what? Discipline. Every path gives you some rules and regulations. And ultimately, you know, you're studying in a university. Why it is good? We know why it is bad. But it has one good thing. It teaches you some discipline. And discipline makes you a little humble. In any, you know, enterprise, you need to be a little disciplined. And discipline means humility. Discipline means you do not what you want to do. Right? Discipline means you do what you are told to do. And it already a big blow for your false ego. You know, I want to do this. But no, you have to do this. You have to do this to achieve anything. You know, ultimately humility is the key for everything, for any success in life. But the humility is needed for us to experience love. Because you cannot experience love without humility. You know, you have to develop deep, genuine humility to experience love. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya says that the spiritual life starts from Trinada Pisanichina Tarov Ivasa Vishnuna Amanina Manadina Kirtaniya Sadahari. The spiritual life starts from this. Before that, it's not bhakti. We only start practicing bhakti when we become more humble than the blade of grass and more tolerant than a tree. When we are ready to respect others and we don't expect respect to ourselves. Before that, it's not bhakti. Sometimes there are many people who are very proud and they practice bhakti. They chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Ram. They beautifully sing kirtans Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. They know shastras. They quote shastras left and right. Now they know so many Sanskrit slokas. You see them, they're very proud. You know, you go to, you know, basically anywhere. You go to Vrindavan. This year I was attending some katha. I'm learning Hindi, therefore I wanted to listen some katha, and I went to some very beautiful kathakar there in Vrindavan. My goodness, he was speaking so beautifully. He knew so many shlokas. Oh my goodness, you know, he was so learned. And he spoke, you know, sometimes he would speak. One sentence would take him 5 minutes to finish. You know, he was speaking, it was probably a huge sentence. He was such a narrator. My goodness. But I felt totally, completely empty in the heart after his lectures. Why? Because he was so proud. He was sitting there. He was so proud. It was just a good show. Beautiful show. Amazing show. Very professional show. Extremely professional. But show. Empty. Empty. No love. Because no humility. And, you know, when humility is not there, the heart is always lacking something. The heart always wants some honor, some money, some prestige, some whatever. You know, why? Because it's empty. Empty heart. Vacuum in the heart. Not happy heart. And the pride is there, and pride is, actually, pride is the manifestation of empty heart. When the heart is full, like Prabhupada used to give this example, when the tree is full of fruits, what it makes? The branches go down. When your heart is full, when it has fruits, it goes down. And when it's barren, when there is nothing there, look at me. Nothing is there. When your heart is full, it goes down. It's so important to have this and to understand what is real bhakti. Before that, if you don't have humility, if you don't practice humility, it's just a shadow of bhakti. It's not bhakti, it's bhakti abbas. It's abbas. It's abbas at best. It may be chaya or abbas. Bhakti chaya or bhakti abbas. It's just dim reflection of bhakti. That's why I said that bhakti is so difficult. You're chanting the name Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. But if there is no humility, it's not the name, it's the shadow of name. It's Namabhas. It's not the real name. Krishna is not there, it's just a shadow. You know, if you look, you come to the deity, you don't see the deity. You don't see God. Why? Because there is no humility. Because you are looking at, it's me. I came. You know, I'm looking at you. Hare Krishna. As Prabhupada said, we come not to see the deity. We come to be seen by the deity. That's humility. We come to be seen. We have to come. When we come to the temple, we come to be seen by the deity. When we chant, it's not that we chant. I'm chanting 64 rounds a day. 64 rounds of Nama Parata. Very nice. No. I'm not chanting. Krishna is descending. Krishna is mercifully giving me chance to chant. This is why it is difficult. Why yoga is so simple? Because it doesn't touch your ego. You know, you sit in some asana. Oh my goodness! Look at me. Yeah. Did you appreciate? Yoga is feeding ahankar, and therefore it's so simple. Therefore everyone goes for this path. Therefore real bhakti is so rare. Krishna himself this bahunam janmanamante yanavanmam prapadyante. That's after many life times somebody really surrenders unto me, because surrender means humility. Therefore he says so many living entities, human beings, hardly anyone strives for perfection. Out of so many who achieved perfection, hardly anyone knows me. It's so rare. So rare. Out of millions and millions and millions. That's why it's so difficult. And that's why you know, that's why we have problems in our past. So the real point is that we have to understand that Krishna is everywhere, and this is only possible Because of the humility. When the humility is there, you don't see others as somebody who is foreign to you. You see them as parts of God. And you see them as your masters. They are parts of God, and you are a servant of God. It means you have to serve everyone. That's very difficult. That's a very difficult vision. You know, there is the great devotee of the Lord. He sees that the Lord is in the heart of every living entity. What we do, you know, if somebody, so many living entities are there, and if some living entity is doing some pain to me, what do? Just kill him. You know, little mosquito. Who you think you are? No, you know, the real devotee, he sees that this is God. God is in him. God is in him. There is this story about one great devotee, Vasudev, leper, who had leprosy, and he had worms all over his body. So whenever the worm would fall from his body, he would pick him up and bring him back. Because he saw that he's connected with God. It's not easy. It's not an easy thing. Bhakti is not an easy path. Because you have to really develop genuine humility of the heart. There is a nice story which I read today about Prabhupada. And Govinda Dasi is telling this story. They went with Prabhupada. They stayed at some place in San Francisco, and there was a bed bugs in the bed. And she would wake up, and she would be all, you know, all these pimples because the bed bugs would bite her during the night. And Prabhupada asked her, "What happened with you?" And she said, "Prabhupada, bed bugs biting me." And Prabhupada smiled, and then she said, "Prabhupada, why you don't have this? Bed bugs don't bite you?" Prabhupada says, "No, I know the trick," says Prabhupada. "Listen," says, "I know that the bugs are there, so when I lay down, I pretend that I fell asleep. And I have this very sound and nice breathing, because when somebody is asleep, his breathing is different." And Prabhupada says, "You know, these bugs are very intelligent. They will not bite you unless you're asleep." So Prabhupada told her, "You know, I pretend that I'm asleep, then bugs comes, and I collect these bugs in my hand, then I chant Hare Krishna to them, and I throw them out of the window." And Govinda Dasi was very inspired by this example. And she said, you know, next night she tried to do this, but it didn't work. Somehow or other she fell asleep and the bugs was still biting her. And you know, next night, and then she came to Prabhupada and said, "Prabhupada, I tried to do this, but it didn't work." Prabhupada said, "You have to be little intelligent to do this." What he really explains, that's his vision. He takes this little box, he see they're connected with Krishna. And he, you know, he approaches differently. He deals with them differently because he knows that they're connected with Krishna. And we forget that even our closest friends and relatives are connected with Krishna. What to speak about bugs? We forget that our wife is connected with Krishna. We think she's connected with Maya. Maybe she is, but this is not a very high-class vision. The high-class vision is to understand that everyone, you know, he may be an enemy. He may have some dushta svabhav. It doesn't matter. He may have some bad character. You know, you have to understand that he's connected with God. And if you understand this, you will be able to change him. Why Prabhupada was able to change so many human beings? Because of only one thing. Because he saw that everyone is connected with God. He didn't see the Americans. He He didn't see the hippies, dirty hippies. You know, Prabhupada was ready to preach anywhere. Once he was taken to the, how you call this, people who go naked? Nudist. To nudist community. Prabhupada is sannyasi from Vrindavan. You know, men and women. You know, he would give lecture and kirtan. You know, just imagine, everyone is naked. And sannyasi from Vrindavan is sitting there and giving lecture. I mean, for anyone it would be quite disgusting to be there. But he came. Why? Because he didn't see that they are just some crazy people. He saw them, they're connected with God, they're children of God, they're beautiful inside. They're just bewildered by this illusory energy. So, basically what I wanted to say, Prabhupada wrote a beautiful purport to this verse. And in this purport he very clearly says that the goal of yoga is love. The goal of Bhagavad Gita is love. The goal of all our pursuits is love. We don't need anything else. And if we know how to get love, we will get love. And the only way to get love is to develop humility. You cannot practice love. Love should happen with you. Love descends on you. Love is a state of your heart. But you can practice humility. You can practice tolerance. You can practice respect. That's what we have to do. This is our sadhana. Then, at one point, love will happen to us and we will be the most happy people on the earth. And that's the message of Bhagavad Gita, ultimate message of Bhagavad Gita. And we would not be able to understand it if it was not for Prabhupada, who had this real experience. So, thank you very much. Message today. Maybe there are some questions. Yes.
And in that question, whatever, and how we communicate.
Ah, yeah.
You said that humility can be practiced.
Yes.
Well, what comes first? Is it tolerance or humility? What do we practice first? Tolerance or humility?
Well, in my humble opinion, tolerance is even more important, because tolerance, you know, humility you can imitate, tolerance you cannot imitate. You can pretend to be humble, but you cannot pretend to be tolerant. So, tolerance comes first, and tolerance, if you practice tolerance, then it brings about humility.
Is the basis of bhakti submission? Is that the
surrender,
basis?
Submission, whatever you call it, shraddha, faith, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that it's all synonymous. The qualification, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, the qualification for bhakti is shraddha, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur and all acharyas, Jiva Goswami also, Srila Prabhupada, they explain that, and that shraddha means sharanagati, surrender. Surrender means submission. Surrender starts with anukulyasa sankalpah, you accept whatever is favorable, you follow the rules, you accept whatever is favorable, you reject whatever is unfavorable. And then there are higher states of sharanagati, of your surrender. Yes, it's surrender. Faith means surrender. There is no faith without surrender. There is no surrender without faith.
Is that why you said it's difficult, this path, because we didn't come to the material world with the idea of surrendering?
Of course. We came to practice pride. We came to practice ahankar. We're bringing our ahankar from life to life. It's there. It's very prominent. The whole karma pursuit. I recently spoke with very deep astrologer, and he said that the whole karma is activated by pride. If you're humble, your karma is just there. It waits till you become proud. And then it... if you're humble, there is no karma. You're not reacting. What is karma? Karma is your reaction of what is happening to you. What is humility? Humility is your ability not to react according to your ahankar. You know, karma is, you know, what the reaction is equal and or sometimes much stronger than the action or whatever. Action and reaction is there. So humility means there is action but there is no reaction. And it means there is no karma. And karma is very much aggravated and activated when there is a pride. And we come with karma. We live in this world, this is the whole world is karma. The whole game of this world is karma. You know, I'm higher than you. I'm this, you know, I have this much and that much. There is a beautiful, I tell you this little story, it's a beautiful story. It's a story from Hitopadesh. Beautiful story. One sadhu came to another sadhu, and they were sitting and they were discussing something, and the sadhu to whom he came, he kept a stick near to him, and sometimes he would beat, and ultimately it was kind of irritating, you know. They were discussing something, some spiritual matters, and this, you know, sadhu is beating with the stick, and ultimately this other sadhu, he said, you know, what's going on? You're not respecting me. Why are you beating with the stick? And he said, no, please don't mind. Forgive me if I offended you in any way. But, you know, in my home, there is mouse which is living. And this mouse is very, you know, obnoxious and very proud. And, you know, it's just... goes everywhere, and you know, if I don't keep this stick, it will just ruin everything. And then he showed, see, you know, I have to keep all my things so high because this mouse is jumping so high, so high, so high. And the sadhu, he started thinking, you know, the normal mouse doesn't jump that high. You know, this mouse was really jumping very high, she was really proud. And then she said, you know, I know one solution for this. He said, this mouse must be a very proud mouse. So why one becomes proud? Because one is rich. So let's go, let's find where she lives. It lives. They found a little hole of this mouse and they somehow or other dug it out, and there was a lot of grain stored there. And they took everything, and immediately the mouse became so humble. The little purport of this story is that when you have a lot, you jump very high. And if you have nothing, you become really Trinada Visu. No. You become very humble. So... we come to this world for what? To accumulate pride in different ways. Therefore, Queen Kunti says, Janmaishwarya Shruta Shribira Damana Madhav Puman. You know, one becomes mad, proud, because of Janma, of high birth, I am Brahman, I am this, I am that. Aishwarya, because of one's opulence or power. Shruta, learning, Shri, beauty. You know, this is all pride, this is all game of this material world. We came here not to practice humility, therefore bhakti is so rare and so difficult. And therefore, so difficult. Even if the people don't have anything, they still have some pride. You speak with Rikshawala is also proud. somehow.
Srila Prabhupada in the Gita gives the beautiful definition of humility. He says humility means one is not anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. That is his one sentence definition.
Yeah, because that's what we want. This is the food for our false ego. Our false ego is very hungry and it says, give me some food. Anyway, thank you very much. Thank you for trying to practice this glorious path of bhakti yoga. That's the real fulfillment of our aspirations. Yes.
Sometimes people say that you guys have the Hare Krishna devotees, you guys have slowed the pace of advancement in the sense that many engineers and many professionals have given up their profession and become a dedicated devotee. So how do we like answer them and how do we explain to them that what is real advancement and how we can advance?
See, Prabhupada very clearly explains in Bhagavad Gita in 14th chapter that there are different criteria of advancement. The criteria of advancement which people apply is the criteria of the mode of passion. I'll first explain the science behind this and then maybe give some answer to them. So Prabhupada says that modern civilization in advanced by the measurement of the mode of passion. From the point of view of passion, modern civilization is indeed advanced. The Vedic civilization is from the passionate point of view is not advanced. It's quite low. But it's very advanced from the sattvic, from the goodness point of view. The criteria judging, you know, you have to really have the measure stick. The measure stick should be the same. You know, why we are sometimes don't understand each other? Because we're using different measure sticks. So first of all, we have to really understand what are the criteria of advancement. From the passionate point of view, modern civilization is more advanced. There is no doubt about it. From the passionate point of view, they're right. But we also have to see, Krishna very clearly explains that ultimately passion destroys. That passion gives you boost of happiness in the beginning and a lot of grief at the end. And that's what we see in the modern civilization. Modern civilization gives you some sort of happiness in the beginning, but gives you so much sufferings in the end, so much anxieties. You know, from passionate point of view, from the Rajaguna point of view, Indian civilization is less advanced than American, right? American is more advanced. But if you take, for example, simple criteria, the mental health, in India, there is around 25-26% of people who are certified mental patients, which is pretty high. Only 12%. In Europe, it's 26. In America, it's 52. So, from this point of view, America is also more advanced, right? 52 mental cases. 52% mental cases. You know, half of the nation is crazy. And this is the result of advancement. You said this is more advanced. Yes, technologically it's more advanced. Yes, from many other points of view it's more advanced. What is the result of it? No peace. No happiness. Nothing. So, if we judge the civilization according to the other criterias, let's see, you know, what is the advancement? The advancement of the civilization, if you know, if we try to judge the civilization according to the number of happy people, America would not be the number one country in the world. It would be somewhere by the end. Because people are not happy there. Really not happy. Really in anxiety. So, what is the advancement of the world? Advancement of the world is that the whole world becomes madhouse. This is the advancement you want. Yeah, right, go this path. It's right there. It's in front of you. So, what we want? What is the criteria of advancement? Advancement is not what kind of car you are driving. You know, car will not make you happy. Advancement of civilization is the number of happy people. And from this criteria, Bangladesh is probably the most advanced country in the world. Something like this. I don't know. Which one is...
So, Prabhuji, like, how do we, like you all animals, have the fundamental tendency to defend ourselves, right? So, how do we reconcile this tendency with Krishna consciousness? See, because once we have this tendency of defending ourselves, we won't build weapons. We'll always have different scientists, we'll have to build weapons, because other countries are weaker, otherwise your civilization can't survive. So, like, how do you reconcile this technological development, which is due to... the threat of defense with Krishna consciousness? Because if you are a defense scientist, you hardly can spare like 2 hours or 3 hours a day for yourself. So.
Yeah, we have to do defense, definitely, living in this crazy world. But, you know, technological advancement, we cannot, you know, it's going on. But it's only going on because the whole shift of the civilization is, the whole emphasis of the civilization is for this material sort of advancement. And Prabhupada, he wanted revolution in the consciousness of people so that people would wake up to the fact that this is a wrong path. See this, you know, the whole civilization is wrong. It basically destroys everything now because of this technological civilization. Yes, the technology created chemistry, but this chemistry, you know, it makes, you know, poisons, and you have to sell these poisons, and these poisons are everywhere in the food. The whole food is poisonous, and everything is poisonous. So, Prabhupada, see, the civilization which we're living in, it's a dead end. You know, the most advanced scientist, I don't remember his name now, he's an atheist, first class atheist. He already said, some crazy guy from England.
Stephen Hawking. Stephen Hawking.
Yeah. Yeah, he already said that the Earth is finished. We still have maybe 20, 30 years to live in this Earth. And in the meantime, through the technological advancement, we have to find a suitable planet somewhere else to relocate there and to spoil to spoil the other place. You know, this is what it is. So crazy. The whole civilization is just crazy. You know, yeah, we'll just abandon this whole planet, let it rot, and we'll go somewhere else and spoil some other planet. It's greed. Greed was in the heart. This guy, he's an invalid. He's not...
Paraplegia.
You know, yeah. And he goes to prostitutes. That's what... You know, it's just insane. The whole thing is insane. You know, people lost it, and exactly that's what Krishna says here. He says here, if somebody sees me everywhere and everything sees in me, in connection with me, he's never lost. So because we don't see everything in him, and we don't see him in everything, we are lost. Nashta. Nashta means destroyed. This destructive mentality is there because we don't see the connection with God. That's it. And therefore it's destructive. It's destructive for the whole world. It's self-destructive in the first place. It's totally self-destructive. So from this point of view, you know, this is the civilization which we're living on. And the only way is to somehow or other to wake up from this nightmare. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Okay, I guess I have to go. It's very late.